Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. Today I have kind of a different twist on my guest. I'm going to be talking to Washington College coach Jeff Shirk. Currently, his Shoremen sit at number 10 in the polls, 10-3 record. I want to talk to him because the great tradition of the war at the shore happened last Wednesday, and Shirk's squad got their first victory in the series since 2002 and the first home win since 1990. I really wanted to dive into the matchup. To me, part of the fun of college sports and some of the smaller scale, like Division III particularly, is these very kind of tradition-rich, pageantry-rich rivalries. The War at the Shore is one of those. I mean, it has that kind of fancy name. It's a local, geographical, non-conference rivalry, and it has a bit of a tradition to it. So Coach Shirk and I kind of really dove into all the facets of a big game like that. Unfortunately, his Shoremen couldn't back up that win with another victory. They fell to Gettysburg this weekend, but they still sit in a pretty good spot in the polls anyway, but they'll have a lot of work to make up in the Centennial Conference tournament, as that may become their main path to get to the NCAA tournament in May. As always, I just want to thank everybody who's been listening along. You can continue to find all of Inside Lacrosse's great podcasts at the iTunes Store under Inside Lacrosse or on InsideLacrosse.com. Any thoughts or concerns about the show, please feel free to email me, zbabo@InsideLacrosse.com, or you can find me on Twitter, @ZachBabbo, that's @ZachBabbo, no spaces. Okay, let's get to our interview with Washington College coach Jeff Shirk. Coach Jeff Shirk of Washington College is joining us right now. Coach Shirk, thanks for coming on today. This is a bit of an unconventional D3 podcast for me in terms of normally I talk to a coach on maybe a Monday or Tuesday, recapping the weekend's game. Today I'm talking to you before the game against Gettysburg coming up, but pretty soon after the big War at the Shore game. I kind of wanted to hit on that, on top of it being a busy week around here next week as we prep for the Big City Classic, which, mind you can still get tickets for at BigCityClassic.com. I really wanted to focus on the War at the Shore because to me it seems like one of those events that kind of pops off the D3 calendar from year to year. I've heard about it since I was a younger lacrosse player, and I didn't even grow up following the D3 game. So I it really seemed like a seminal game, and the fact that you guys kind of broke a long losing streak in that game to Salisbury, jumped it, I guess, into the headlines a little bit more. Can you just kind of talk to me about, what do you kind of take away from that game, thinking of it a couple of days after the fact now?
First, Zach, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. With the game, it's a big deal for us because it's been a long time since we've won. And, in talking to our seniors, they had a long 3 years of the game not even being close. I think as we're rebuilding the program and trying to get ourselves back to where we were not too long ago, this is a big win for us to give the guys confidence that, our hard work is paying off, and it gets the monkey off our back a little bit to where guys can now think of it as a game as opposed to, maybe being a little intimidated by it because of the outcomes, in recent years. So it's a big deal for the program.
In some ways, does it help revitalize the rivalry a little bit? I mean, you guys hadn't won home in this series since, I believe, 1990, maybe? And you guys hadn't won, beaten Salisbury, period, since 2002. And, a while ago, when I used to live in Central New York, I covered the Syracuse seasons a lot, and Scott Moore used to kind of talk about the Syracuse-Albany rivalry. He couldn't really call it a rivalry because Albany never beat Syracuse, and obviously this year they did, so maybe now that game has more juice going forward. I mean, this game has had more of a back-and-forth nature earlier, but for almost 10 years there, it was pretty well handled by Salisbury, by you guys getting a win back and maybe evening up a little bit in that essence. I mean, does it add more juice to kind of the game on the schedule? Maybe we'll add a little more excitement next year now because it's not, there's a vengeance aspect or whatnot, I guess you could almost say. I mean, it always seems better when series like this kind of go back and forth a little bit.
I agree with you, and I think it absolutely rejuvenates that rivalry, because the honesty is, I mean, it hasn't been much of a game. I mean, this is my third year at Washington College, and And the first 2 years, we got beat pretty bad. I think, you know, especially from a fan standpoint and the alumni standpoint and our current players, the fact that it was a one-goal game this year and it could have gone either way, we've gotten better. Salisbury continues to be very good. You know, I think it absolutely creates that buzz to where I foresee next year being one of the biggest war on the shores in recent memory. And the last three I've been a part of have been huge. So I do think it's a big deal in rejuvenating that rivalry.
I guess you kind of hit on it there in terms of environment. We can kind of get into that if you want to. I kind of want to dive into Wednesday night pretty thoroughly here, maybe. So we can almost start there. I mean, can you paint me a bit of a picture as to what the atmosphere was like going on around the game? You know, it was on your campus. I mean, what good crowd, you know, kind of a feeling in the building or anything. I mean, it's a night game under the lights, so that always adds a little bit of something to all these kind of athletic contests. But can you kind of paint me a scene maybe of going into this matchup?
The atmosphere was amazing. We had a girls game, women's lacrosse game in the stadium beforehand. So people started to show up early and the student body, really started to have a good time early, so that when the game started, you know, the hill was pretty full. And if you've ever been to Washington College Stadium, we've got the benches, you know, that are right by the woods, and then across from the benches is the stadium, and then to the left of the benches is a hill in front of two dorms. And I mean, the atmosphere of our home games, and especially War on the Shore, is all the students will fill that hill. And I mean, the crowd just kept getting bigger as the game went on, and the crowd kept getting louder as the game kept getting closer, and especially in the fourth quarter. And to be honest with you, with the atmosphere, and I said it to a couple of alums, I said it to my wife, at the end of the game was when I finally took a deep breath and tried to soak in the moment. And they had just presented the cup to us, and the boys picked it up, ran across to, kind of hold up in front of the parents. And then they kind of did a little victory lap where they circled in front of the student body, and the images of the student body up on the hill, jumping up and down, and the noise. The environment was unbelievable. And we get that a lot of our home games, but it felt like the entire student body, the entire, 1400 plus student body was up on that hill. So it was a pretty neat environment.
I'd say that might be about accurate. I mean, 1,400 plus students, and it looks like the box score said about 2,000 or so fans came out. So that's a pretty healthy crowd. Do you sense sometimes your team almost feeding off something like that? I mean, to me, I never got to play in front of a crowd like that, or in a rivalry, I guess, with kind of that much blood in it. I mean, is that one of those things where you can kind of get a sense that the guys are kind of feeding off the moment, feeding off the crowd, and it adds a little bit of extra adrenaline or just something to a game?
You know, I think it does. A couple reasons for that. You go back and you look at the film, and, we always stress the guys to play fast. And, guys were flying around especially fast. And something that I didn't really notice during the game, but then you go back in the film and you watch it, is when we scored our fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh goal, the celebrations were pretty cool, to where, we were shooting on the end to where the student body is up on that hill. So, I mean, each one of those goals, our guys jumped around and celebrated with each other, but then the camera panned over to the crowd on the hill, and it was like a huge mosh pit, to where I think it absolutely, I think, helped keep the guys excited and keep them flying around. And I can't speak for Salisbury, but I know if it was us, and I've been in that situation before, you see the other team jumping around, you're at the other team's stadium, their student body is jumping around, it's hard to stop that momentum.
I guess maybe in hindsight you have a different view of it almost, but is that something you're ever aware of in terms of, when the coin flip happens in lacrosse games, sometimes you think, or I see coaches or teams pick which side or which bench, and you think about something like sun in a goalie's eyes or something like that, but there's really not much that kind of differentiates one end of the field from the other. Is that one of those things where maybe you think, boy, I want to be going towards my student section in the fourth quarter or something like that, or that's just kind of the way it worked out as the game played?
In the future, yes. Pregame, to be honest, the way that I think about it is I like to have my defense on the bench side in the fourth quarter. So if we're kind of chirping stuff out and trying to coach them on the fly, it's a little easier for them to hear us. But absolutely, in looking back, I mean, that's a huge home field advantage, you know, just because they're so loud, and it's more important for you to be able to communicate on defense than it is for you on offense. So it's it'll absolutely go into the thought process, you know, down the road.
You know, you guys had a great turnout in Washington, and in previous years, you know, in the games at Salisbury, Salisbury always has a great turnout there. I mean, what's it like to be involved in a series like that that seems to be such a fan favorite, that even if the game maybe hasn't been overly competitive or gone your way in the past handful of years, crowds really seem to like this rivalry, you know, both school communities seem to really embrace it, that kind of thing?
You know, it's pretty neat, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't fully understand it until my first year here, and we got a call for it to be on TV, and it was on, you know, the Baltimore, you know, Game of the Week, and, you know, sitting there going, how big is this game really going to be? Because I had never experienced a war on the shore. And then as it got closer, I mean, just the social media and everybody talking about it on campus, and then all of a sudden you show up, and the campus is just mobbed. You've got TV cameras, all the alums are talking about it. So I mean, the magnitude of this game is unbelievable, and I think that's what really makes it neat from a tradition standpoint. And I mean, the emails and the phone calls, you know, in the last, you know, 24 hours that I've gotten from alums just really emphasizes how special and meaningful this game is. And I know Salisbury is the same way. So it's one of those things to where, if you haven't experienced a war on the shore, you know, whether you're affiliated with Salisbury or Washington College or neither of them, it's definitely one of those things to where you want to come experience it, because it's unbelievable how the fans embrace it, the student bodies embrace it, the administrators, everyone at the school, parents, the alumni. It's a pretty neat tradition.
Is having that kind of a fan favorite rivalry like that, particularly with a non-conference opponent and one with, you know, kind of the D3 or national prestige of Salisbury, is that something you kind of, you know, use as an advantage in recruiting or anything? I mean, that, you know, you can sell a big game atmosphere like that. You can sell that kind of tradition. I mean, I imagine, you know, if this atmosphere is so great, I imagine this is a great game to have a recruit on campus for, maybe, you know, to let them kind of see what that whole environment is. Is that something you help kind of pitch to kids?
We absolutely do. And I mean, the big thing, you know, from a recruit standpoint is, of course, we've got the pictures and we can show them stuff when they're on their visits and everything. But kind of case in point is, we had five of our, you know, seniors in high school now that are in our recruiting class that are going to be incoming freshmen in the fall, they came to the game, and they were up in the student section and just kind of enjoyed and got to see the environment. And every single one of them, and a couple of their parents, you know, shot emails the next day just talking about how exciting it was and how, you know, even though we use it in recruiting, you know, what we say didn't do it justice on how great the atmosphere actually is. And I mean, let's be honest, and, you know, lacrosse has a great following, but there's not many schools at any level that you can say a regular season game you're going to play in that kind of atmosphere. So it's a pretty neat thing. And I think it just goes back to how important and special lacrosse is to Washington College, and how important it is to Salisbury and the Eastern Shore, and the following that we have out here and in the Baltimore and Philadelphia area, and people that will travel for the game. But I mean, it's absolutely a tool we use in recruiting, because it, you know, what do the best players want to do? They want to come play for a great program, get a great education, learn a lot while they're here, and have experiences like our guys got on Wednesday night, to where, I mean, we had guys, you know, that were tearing up after the game because of the atmosphere and the pride, and so it's pretty special.
So I guess, you know, we can dive into Wednesday's game a bit more here. So you guys opened up the scoring, taking the early lead. The first half kind of went more or less back and forth. You know, it you go into halftime locked up at 2-2. Can you kind of take me through the early goings in the game? You know, any things you guys were trying to do, maybe you know, game plans coming in, and whether or not they were working to any kind of an effect or anything like that?
You know, I think the first half was basically both teams trying to feel each other out, and both defenses were playing extremely well. You know, and so I think that's why the score was so low, because, I mean, both teams were kind of getting their shots, and it went back and forth. But, you know, that first half for us, was basically validating that we could hang with Salisbury. And I think it was a huge confidence builder, because even last year they jumped up quick. I want to say it was 6-0 in the first few minutes of the game. And then we battled back to 6-2. I want to say it was at halftime. And then it ended up being not very close. But this year, I mean, it was back and forth, tied up at halftime. So the demeanor at halftime was, let's keep doing what we're doing, keep flying around. And our defense was playing well. Goalie was playing great. We were getting our opportunities, but their goalie was playing well too. We were battling at the faceoff X, so our faceoff guy was confident. It was one of those things to where, game plan after the first half and throughout the first half was just making sure that we ran around, played hard, and built that confidence that this year was different than, some of the previous years, especially our seniors who the 3 years prior, it was a very different game.
We actually had a photographer at the game, and she was kind of saying the same thing, that, you could kind of sense the wax confidence growing as the game went on. And I mean, to me, I've seen Salisbury play enough that I find that to be a really important thing when teams play them, is that whether you admit it or not, there's something about playing Salisbury that it's very easy to get a little intimidated, to kind of, even if you build a lead, if they start to chip away at it, you kind of be like, oh, here comes the inevitable Salisbury comeback. I guess, is that something you are very aware of as a coach going in, or something you have to try and fight a little bit of, that, I can feel my team is ready, they can say they're ready, but when you play Salisbury, it's very easy for I guess Salisbury to kind of exert themselves in the game in almost that intangible sense?
It is. And I mean, Salisbury is notorious for their pregame antics. Wednesday was no different, to where, they line up in twos and they march on the field and they're chanting the whole time. And, they don't walk around your bench. They walk right through your bench. And, 2 years ago, saying Coach Berkman, the schedule, it was our senior day, 17 minutes before the game was due to start, we're going to do our senior day presentation. Well, they decided they weren't going to come out until 17 minutes before the game. And so over the loudspeaker, they're trying to honor our seniors, and they're walking the stadium chanting. You couldn't hear what what our announcer was saying about our seniors. So, I think that a lot of their antics, they try to intimidate you to win the game before it starts. And it's one of those things that I've been addressing since I've been here to the guys. And I think that, this past War on the Shore, this past Wednesday, the group believes in themselves, and the group wasn't intimidated before the game. And it actually, they put a warning on both teams before the game even started, for chatter that was going on before the game. So, I mean, it was one of those things to where I was really encouraged, because, guys didn't back down at all. They kind of stood up, went toe to toe with Salisbury's pregame antics, and then the game started, and we could really sort it out on what really matters. And I think you're absolutely right. As the game went on, our confidence just kept building. And then, that fourth quarter, guys just buckled down. And I mean, it was just, it was inspiring to watch the plays that individuals were making within the system that allowed us to make the comeback we did.
You mentioned the good goalie play in the early goings, and Ted DeSalva really had a great game for you guys, a great first half, particularly a great second quarter, most particularly, I guess. He has 7 saves in the second quarter there, helps keep the game at that 2-2 tie. How big is that, and almost in some ways, how essential is it? I heard, a large part of W&L's victory over Salisbury was kind of a similar thing, where their goalie just kind of stood on his head for a day, and even if the save numbers weren't some absurd number, he just made so many saves that it seemed to really affect the flow of the game. What kind of an effect did Ted have on the way this game played out?
I think Teddy had a huge effect, and I mean, I'm a big believer in goalies and faceoff guys. Can really dictate a game. And that's why we, in recruiting, go after those two positions first, and they're so important to us. And I mean, Teddy proved it on Wednesday night, to where he was on his game. And, you take Salisbury, who has a very good offensive players. They've got a very good system, but then they also freelance very well and just kind of ad-lib, probably better than almost anybody in the country. To have your goalie be able to bail your defense out when a mistake is made is unbelievable. And that's what Teddy did. I mean, I think our defense played very well and forced Salisbury a lot of the times, you know, into shots that Teddy could save. But then there's absolutely a couple times where things broke down and Teddy just pulled one out of his back pocket. You know, that maybe a lesser goalie wouldn't have, or a kid that wasn't as locked in wouldn't have. So, you know, it was a total team effort, you know, but without Teddy's play, that game could have been very different.
So then second half, I guess second half starts, or maybe before we even jump to that. So the first half ends, you're in a 2-2 tie. You've seen your team, you know, kind of grow with confidence as the game went on. You're getting a great game out of your goalie. What were you kind of saying to the team or sharing with them in the second half? Was it mostly stick to what you're doing, or was there maybe some things you saw that you thought, okay, we'll make a couple of tweaks now, and I think this or that might give us an advantage now?
We didn't change anything that we were doing system-wise, they were riding us a little different than some other teams did. So we made a couple of adjustments, in our clearing game, which I think helped in the second half. And then, you know, to be honest with you, more of the adjustments came in the third quarter when they scored, I want to say it was 4 unanswered. They went up 6-2 and, you know, one was an unlucky bounce goal. But then 3 were just kind of simple little things that we didn't do well on defense. So then made those adjustments and then played a much better fourth quarter on the defensive end. But I mean, the guys were ready to play emotionally. You know, they were into it. They knew the game plan. We were doing what we do. And we didn't really have to adjust much. It was more kind of keeping guys focused on the small picture of let's make the next play, fellas. Concentrate on making the next play as opposed to looking up at the scoreboard and seeing the clock and thinking of the big game picture. So it was interesting trying to keep them focused. But guys responded.
So I guess then taking through that, you know, the third quarter, Salisbury goes on a 4-1 run. You know, they score 2, you guys get 1, then they put on 2 more. They build out a 6-3 lead, and I mean, again, in one of those things of, you know, from seeing Salisbury from the times I have anyway, that seems to kind of be that point where they tend to break a lot of opponents of. If the game might be close in the first half, Salisbury is kind of notorious for being able to get that third quarter rush out of the locker room and build some distance and try and take over the game a little bit. And I think that kind of plays into some of their, you know, overall psychological, you know, stuff too. So, you know, what are you kind of battling with at that point? I mean, you say some mistakes, you know, and little things the defense maybe wasn't doing right. But above that, are you trying to do anything to make sure the team is, you know, maintaining that confidence they had in the first half, not, you know, letting the game get away at all? I mean, 3 goals is far from insurmountable, but I guess it's kind of more on how your team's feeling after it gets down by those 3 goals. Maybe that's more important.
Agreed. And I think, you know, one of the things that we tried to stress was just relaxing guys a little bit, you know, because it's easy for that doubt to creep into your mind in a big game when all of a sudden you're down by 3 and you've only been able to score 3 goals. So you start thinking, oh my gosh, can we come back? Can we, you know, if we make another mistake, it's going to be another goal, and you start to tighten up a little bit. And kind of the example I'll use is on one of those goals, I don't remember which one it was in the third quarter, Johnny Poe, who's an outstanding long stick mid, just made a little bit of a mistake. So he came off the field, and I mean, he looked like he was devastated. And so just had a little conversation with Johnny and, you know, picked your head up and, you know, didn't yell at him for making a mistake, just encouraged him and tried to build him back up. And we talked about, you know, how to correct the mistake. And it was one of those things where that's the approach that we took. And that's the approach we take most of the time. But, you know, after the game, Johnny came up and we were kind of talking about stuff. And that was a moment to where in his mind, the game started to turn because he realized he made a mistake. They scored the goal, but that doesn't mean that the game is over and they're going to go on their run. You know, hey, let's come together and let's relax a little bit and let's start making plays one play at a time. And so I think we try to keep that demeanor on the sideline. And once, you know, in the fourth quarter, we scored that 4th goal and guys got kind of excited. All of a sudden we scored the 5th goal. And then you sat back, you're okay, who's going to make the next play? And you know, it just felt like everybody on the team wanted to be that guy to make the next play as opposed to looking around for someone else to do. And it was a pretty neat feeling and a pretty neat experience. You know, that, to be honest with you, I haven't seen in years past.
Is that also something? I mean, it's obviously great when everybody wants to, you know, everybody has the confidence and that enthusiasm to want to be the guy to go out and make the next play. Do you have to caution anybody at all that, you know, to not be the hero, to not force something if it's not necessarily there? That, you know, you guys are all good. We can get the goal if we kind of do what we know we do well instead of somebody trying to be Superman all of a sudden?
Yeah, and we did. And the example for that was in the third quarter, Cody Engelhart, you know, took about an 18-yard shot that, you know, he's just trying to make a play, but it's not a real high percentage shot. And so, you know, that was the conversation we had coming off. It's like, well, that next play doesn't have to be a goal. That next play is, you know, you draw a slide because you're so athletic. You know, instead of taking that 18-yard shot, you know, through the slide, move it one more, and then that's the play you need to make. And so we definitely, you know, kind of had to have a couple conversations with a couple different guys, because I think that is the tendency a little bit to where, you know, your best players want to put it all on their shoulders, but that's not necessarily the best way to go about it. So, again, I just think staying calm and simplifying things and keeping guys excited, you know, kind of really helped us play loose and got guys excited, not to make the next home run, but to make the next single. And you add all those singles together, and next thing you know, you have what you need.
So, you know, we maybe need to break down each step of the four-goal run that, you know, eventually got you guys the win, but maybe the last one or two there. I mean, you know, you mentioned Cody Engelhart before. He scores one with about 2:17 left, and then Hunter to tie it, and then Hunter Nowicki gives you the game winner with 1:04. Can you kind of take me through those two goals, what you guys were trying to do maybe, and you know, once you even got the tie, you know, were there certain tactical approaches or anything from there, you know, to maybe hedge a little bit that, you know, you wouldn't leave yourself exposed on the other end to give up the win or anything? Or was it just, you know, kind of letting it play and seeing what happens?
You know, to be honest with you, it was letting it play and seeing what happens and just stressing to the guys to do what we do. Because we have a definite structured system, but allow our guys a lot of freedom in that system. So at times it doesn't feel like a system. And with that being said, when we get ourselves in trouble, it's usually because we make a poor decision within that system that we don't do. So it was just kind of stressing the guys to keep doing what we do at a high level. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, I'm just going off of memory right here, because I didn't watch offensively the last couple goals of the game. I was breaking more down the defense, but, you know, we have our offense, and once our set, if our set doesn't work, you know, we go to a freelance offense, and, you know, guys just follow the rules and kind of ad lib and do it as it comes. And, you know, so it was just one of those things to where, you know, guys hit shots and they need to hit shots, and guys drew slides and needed to draw slides, and they moved the ball and made good decisions. And, you know, I think the biggest key down that stretch was Michael Trapp. I mean, we were scoring, you know, goals to come back into it, and Michael kept winning faceoffs. You know, so it's one of those things to where at the end of the game, I'm sitting there after the game, I'm going, man, that wasn't as stressful at the end of the game as I thought it might be. And one of the reasons was we weren't on defense very much for the last 3 or 4 minutes. You know, I mean, we tie it up and Michael gets the next face off because the Salisbury kid moved early. And then, you know, we go ahead, Michael gets the next face off. And then, because the kid went early again, it was that 30-second penalty. And so it was just one of those things to where, being able to control face offs and guys basically embracing our system, but also making good decisions within the system. You know, I think just it allowed it to work out the way it did.
I was going to say, Trapp had one of those days that kind of he seemed he played better than maybe his stats belie, because, you know, 9 for 16, it's a good day. It's not a dominant day, but he walks away with, you know, Grant Hughes scores that goal at 6:05 to get it. To get you guys within a goal, and Trapp proceeds to win every face-off for the rest of the game to get you possession and to lock it up after the final, you know, go-ahead goal. Can you maybe talk, you know, the emotion or the energy on the bench when Hunter Nowicki scores with 1:04 left to get you the lead, kind of, you know, the reaction on the bench from that, and then maybe the, you know, any energy as that last minute ticked down, you had possession and you realized we're going to walk out of here with a W. We're, you know, we're getting our seniors a win tonight. We're winning this pretty big game on schedule.
You know, I think, you know, when that game winner was scored, you know, to put us up 7-6, you know, then we had the face-off. During the game, I mean, we were trying to calm guys down. I was trying to calm guys down and just, hey, get the next play, get the next play, get the next play. Don't count this thing before it's over. We got to be ready to make plays because I'm just knowing Salisbury, I had no doubt in my mind that they were going to make a run at the cage. You know, and then when Trapper got that last face off with a minute, two, however it was left, you could just kind of see the celebration from everybody. And the offense got on the field because Coach Brooklyn called a timeout to kind of set up what they needed to do to get the ball back. And guys did not run scared. They knew that Salisbury was going to come after them. And the guys ran with confidence, moved the ball, and really executed our end of the game, you know, being up and running the clock out. And, you know, then J.D. Campbell had the ball with about 3 seconds left and chucked it up, and guys rushed the field. And that was the first time where I said, okay, I can breathe now a little bit. But in looking back and thinking about it, I mean, our guys, they just had confidence, and they wanted to get the job done, you know, as opposed to hoping it was going to get done. So I think that was the biggest difference is guys just stepped up and they wanted to make the plays.
You know, is that one of those things of, I guess, just the feeling of you know, is a win against a program like Salisbury maybe a little sweeter? Not to pick on Salisbury, I guess, but, you know, they've just been so successful. They have, you know, all these national champions. I mean, the championships, they, you know, they have just been the dominant program of the past, you know, 10, 15 years. It seems like any time anybody in that stretch gets the rare victory on them, it's something you can kind of hang your hat on. And you mentioned earlier, you know, some of the intimidation factors of Salisbury, some of those kind of things that they do, and that just kind of surrounds the aura of a program like that. When you get a win against a program like that, is there something that's maybe a little bit sweeter in that?
I mean, I think there is, because I think it's a big stepping stone in any program that's trying to get to the upper echelon. And I mean, Salisbury, you've got to credit them. I mean, Coach Berkman has done an unbelievable job with his guys on the lacrosse field for a lot of years. And, you know, they've got the championships to prove it. And so it's one of those things to where, you know, it's hard to get it in the guys' minds, no matter who the team is, that this team is beatable and they're not invincible. You know, so we talked to the seniors and we had a little heart to heart. It was with the seniors, but then also with the whole team, because this senior class, of course, had never beaten Salisbury. And you know, there's a couple other teams on the schedule like Gettysburg. The senior class has never beaten Gettysburg, which is who we play tomorrow. The senior class has only beaten Dickinson once. And so we talked about those big three who, you know, are usually top ranked in the country, top ranked in our conference. You know, what's the mental block and how do we kind of get over that hump of being a very good team now to being a team that can compete with that upper echelon? And it was interesting because guys just kind of hashed things out and they were very honest with it. And I think it really helped our mental stability going in to that game, just knowing how each other felt and how we're going to lean on each other. And you know, I think that every program has big wins. And, you know, I think last year, one of our biggest wins was Dickinson, to where they were having the country. And that really kind of showed the guys that, hey, we can compete at this level. And I think this year, you know, the Salisbury win is that next step in that direction of, you know, hey, this isn't a fluke win that happens every so often. And, you know, this is something that we're trying to build something special here, and we can compete with these guys. So, you know, I think it's a huge win for us, for the program, for the guys. And, you know, I mean, I expect a dogfight every single year from here on out with that game that could go back and forth. But we had to get back to the level of the game being competitive again, which I'm excited we've gotten back to.
And I guess maybe, you know, do you have a sense of what this win means in terms of the arc of the season? I mean, you guys have had a good year so far. You know, I believe you currently sit at number 12 in the USILA poll. You're at 11-2. But you have two tough losses to Franklin and Marshall and to Dickinson. The Salisbury game seems, you know, right now anyway, easily the biggest win in terms of just, you know, rivalry and in terms of RPI and all those kind of things that you guys have thus far. You're entering a tough conference game against Gettysburg coming up. You know, do you have a sense of where this kind of leaves your team or a resume for the playoffs at all? I mean, is there a feeling that you guys need to, you know, need to beat Gettysburg, need to win X amount of games in the Centennial Conference, need to win the conference? I mean, D3, it's a very, very small window for at-large bids. You know, there's only, I think, five given out. And even though most of the powers that be are probably slated to win their conferences, you know, if something happens, that changes the at-large bid. And particularly, you know, you guys have a very difficult AQ window because you have to play, you know, Dickinson, who's been playing great all year, as well as perennial, you know, tough teams like F&M and Gettysburg and the like.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't think that, at least in my mind, I'm in a place to where I've started to think about the NCAA tournament from a seeding standpoint. I'm a pretty optimistic person, so I'm just going on the assumption that we're going to do what we need to do to make the NCAA tournament. But more importantly, the conference tournament is what we're chasing right now. And, you know, like I touched on a little bit before, I mean, Gettysburg is a team that our seniors, no one on the team has beaten since they've been at WAC. So just like Salisbury, this is something that we're completely focused on. We're going to get them on their senior day, you know, on their field, which is a tough place to play. And so it's one of those things where I'm trying to keep a focus on that next game at a time because, you know, we still need one more win in conference play in one of our last two conference games, you know, to guarantee ourselves a spot in the conference tournament. So, you know, I'm trying to think on a kind of a more day-to-day scale and definitely want the emphasis on the Centennial Conference before the NCAA tournament. But at the end of the day, I know the boys look at it, and of course I've looked at it, and, you know, when you have a win over W&L and you have a win over Salisbury, you know, that really helps your resume. And if we can get a win over Gettysburg, you know, and make a run at the Centennial Championship, you know, then, you know, we should be standing pretty good for the NCAAs. But, you know, but right now, total focus, Gettysburg tomorrow, see if we can get the job done like we did on Wednesday against Salisbury.
So, Coach, I wanted to, I guess, take a minute or two here. You know, we've been talking for a long time about the War at the Shore, and I really, that was a great game, and I'm glad I kind of got to break that down with you. I wanted to ask a little bit, you know, about, I mean, your coaching background. You've been at WAC since 2010, but you played your college ball at Maryland, and you did a lot of coaching at the Division I level as well. You know, you VMI at Maryland for a little while. You also have experience at NAPS at the high school prep level. You know, at Maryland, though, you got to play in some of those big-time rivalry games, your ACC rivalry, Hopkins, Maryland kind of rivalries. You know, can you compare at all maybe the big-time D1 rivalries to a rivalry like a War at the Shore or something like that? Is there something about old rivalries like that that they're all kind of similar, or is there maybe something that, you know, a different tenor or anything to the D3 ones compared to the D1? I mean, beyond level of play or anything, is it, you know, is there a different loyalty maybe to the D3 ones than D1 because D3 doesn't get as much love? Is there, or the opposite way maybe, is there more on the line in the D1 ones because of all the pressure and all the attention that's focused on D1? I mean, you kind of have an interesting side to both of those, I guess.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting question. I'm just trying to think about, you know, right now the feeling that I had, you know, as a player, you know, as a coach, you know, in that, you know, Hopkins Maryland game and that kind of stuff, and then compared to Salisbury. I mean, it's of course, you know, I'll compare Hopkins Maryland, which I think is very much like a Salisbury WAC game. You know, the crowd's bigger, of course. I think that there's you know, more of a following from non-loyalists, if that makes sense, to where, you know, the following on the War of the Shore, I mean, you have diehard loyal Salisbury or WAC fans there that makes it a very interesting, you know, 2,000 person crowd that is very vested in who wins or loses. You know, at the Maryland game, you know, you had that contingency, but then you also had a ton of kids and a ton of people that just came out because they wanted to see a good game and maybe didn't care as much who won or lost. You know, but I think, you know, from a rivalry standpoint, this compares right up to anywhere I've coached with rivalries. You know, and it, you know, it's one of those things to where I think the D1 level is maybe a little more cutthroat to where, you know, take the Army Navy rivalry. You know, I mean, they when I was at Navy Prep, they used to talk all the time, and Coach Meany was on a, I want to say it was an 11 year run where they had beat Army under his reign, and it was one of those things to where those guys took a lot of pride in that, and it was almost always viewed as, hey, you could have a little bit of an off season, but as long as you get this rivalry game in Army, you're good to go. You know, so I think it's a little more cutthroat at the D3 level from a coaching standpoint, or at the D1 level, I'm sorry, is from a coaching standpoint. You know, but Coach Berkman's as competitive as I am. So, you know, I think we hold ourselves kind of personally accountable, you know, from that standpoint. So, you know, kind of in my experience, Hopkins, Maryland, Army, Navy, WAC Salisbury, they're kind of all right up there with the intensity and the atmosphere around the game.
This might be more of a personal preference kind of question, but it's an argument I kind of have fun having with people, especially with the different venues and crowd sizes in lacrosse. Sometimes I wonder what seems better, you know, if you had 15,000 people in, you know, is a huge crowd, but if they're in a 70,000 person, you know, NFL stadium, it has a different feel than maybe if you had, you know, 5,000 people that are in a 3,600 person small stadium and they're lining the field and, you know, it's just bodies everywhere kind of deal. You know, I guess you've maybe experienced a little bit of both in terms of, you know, you've been to some of those Maryland Hopkins games, maybe where 10 or 15,000 people are in Bird Stadium, but obviously there's even more room than that in Bird Stadium compared to, you know, a venue like Siegel Stadium or your stadium at Washington where, you know, where maybe it's a 2,000 or 3,000 person crowd, but it's packed to the gills. They're right on top of the field. I mean, is there a similarity to those atmospheres? Is there a difference? Does one sometimes feel like it has more energy than the other? Or
see, I think that there's definitely a difference, and I'm a bigger fan of the smaller venue with more people. You know, I was, you know, talking about opinions. I mean, I would argue, you know, someone asked me to put the national championship games back on college campuses to where, I mean, it's wall to wall people and it's so loud as opposed to, you know, some of the open spaces when it's in the big football stadiums, and they get great crowds. Don't get me wrong. But you know, I mean, I remember playing, I was a coach. So it was the ACC championship. I want to say it was in 06, might've been 05, but I want to say it was 06 and it was in Raven Stadium. And, you know, we won it that year at Maryland and they had the kind of the seats sectioned off. So they were really only letting people sit right behind the benches. I mean, that left a lot, I mean, it was packed right behind the benches, but that left a lot of open space, you know, all around the stadium. And, you know, I'd rather have it in a smaller venue on a college campus, you know, where it's packed and there's kind of a tighter knit atmosphere, that goes along with it.
Okay, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I grew up in New Jersey, and I remember going to a couple of the championship games at Rutgers where the stadiums were, you know, packed to the gills. And, I mean, maybe it was 19,000 instead of 35,000 or something, but it was a really energetic, you know, kind of 19,000-person feeling there. And I guess I can kind of use that to wrap up, transition into you know, one of the things I saw in your profile was that you also come from New Jersey. You know, you played college ball and grew up in the Mountain Lakes area. And from, you know, those unfamiliar with maybe the New Jersey scene, Mountain Lakes is this small school in northern New Jersey that is a public school, but a athletics powerhouse, particularly in football and in lacrosse. And maybe you can give some insight, Coach Shirk, into what is it about maybe that high school that, you know, has made Mountain Lakes this kind of lacrosse power in the state of New Jersey and kind of in that tri-state area as well, despite, you know, the relative small size and all of the school and the fact that, you know, when you look at the lacrosse hotbed areas, normally people point to, you know, Long Island and the Hudson Valley in that area before they maybe point to, you know, a pocket of northeastern New Jersey.
It's interesting. I mean, and Mountain Lakes is really unique and how small of a school it was, but how good that they are in athletics. And, you know, lacrosse-wise, I mean, Coach Flynn has done an unbelievable job with the high school program and now, working with the youth league and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's when I was there, first grade was when I started playing lacrosse, and it was actually the first time that they started that young. Now they've got two teams for every grade. So there's two first grade teams, two second grade teams. It seems like any boy in town, that wants to participate in athletics has a lacrosse stick in his hand. So, I think it starts with a lot of competition, starting the kids early. The youth program have fun with the kids to where they actually learn to love the game as opposed to get it as work. I think it's got a lot to do with the people, and that's not just Coach Flynn and the lacrosse program. I mean, it's in a lot of the athletic programs with, Doug Wilkins is retired, but, he was the football coach there for a long time and the principal, and people would look at us all the time and say, how can you guys with no size and, looking at you, you don't look like football players, but you run the wing T offense and you're well coached and you guys do what you do and you're as successful as you are. So I think as a town, it's just taken a lot of pride in being good and competitive. And it's, I don't get back to Mountain Lakes enough because my parents moved out, but it's one of those things to where it's a pretty special place, a lot like WAC is, to where it's small, but people take a lot of pride in what they do and being good at what they're, what they're doing. And it's a pretty neat place.
All right. Well, Coach Shirk, thank you very much for, diving into all this stuff with me today. I think, you may have, I've heard enough good things about it that today may have kind of really sold me on War at the Shore. I might have to try and see if I can work my way out to the Eastern Shore, next year around this time and catch Salisbury's chance to host this thing and maybe see if they can, get their redemption from this past year. So thank you very much for coming on, and best of luck to you guys as you play Gettysburg and hopefully advance on through the Centennial Conference here.
Great. Thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.